WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Michael Lerner wants religion to have a place in American political debate, but he thinks that place is disproportionately represented by the religious right. Lerner is the editor of Tikkun magazine, which offers a Jewish critique of politics, culture, and society. Lerner coined the expression the politics of meaning to describe an alternative to our current politics of greed, materialism, and self-promotion. Lerner says he's trying to reclaim Judaism from the conservatives, the conformists, and the spiritually obtuse. He continues that effort in his new book, Jewish Renewal. He's investigated why so many young Jewish people have virtually left their religion. He did a survey of over 350 people who drifted away from Judaism. Here's what he found.
Well, they told me that it had a great deal to do with the materialism that they experienced in the Jewish world, the lack of spirituality, the insensitivity, actually, to spiritual questions, the focus on selfishness, in this case, the selfishness of Jews focusing on their own survival without regard to the consequences for others. It was totally understandable, of course, given our history, why that would have happened, particularly after the Holocaust. But nevertheless, growing up in America, to be part of a community that seemed to only be asking the question of what was in Jewish interest was very hard for many people to take. Then there was the sexism and homophobia in the Jewish world. And there was a general sense that one's deepest spiritual issues were not being addressed. So ironically, people left the Jewish world not because it was too hard to be different from American society. That's what the Jewish establishment often says, is that Jews ran away because it's so hard to be Jewish. But actually, from my the information that I got in this survey, I found that people ran away because Jewish society was too much like American society. It had adopted too much of the materialism and the selfishness, the self-centeredness, the lack of spiritual sensitivity.
Well, I think there was a period, I think maybe that period doesn't exist anymore, but there was a period when a lot of young Jewish people were looking for spirituality in Buddhism or other seemingly more exotic forms of faith.
Right. People went to other religious communities, or they went to progressive politics as a way to find a community that took ethical values seriously. Or else, many simply said, this whole notion of living a spiritual life is impossible because here are example of the Jewish world where we're supposed to learn spirituality actually is dominated by the people who have the most money and the most economic and political power in the society. So that's impossible, and hence they gave up altogether and went into a materialist life. Ironically, in the absence of a spiritual alternative being provided in the Jewish world led them to go back into a very materialist world. So it wasn't that everybody went towards an alternative spirituality. Some people simply rejected Judaism and went towards the dominant ethos of American society.
You were saying before that you found that a lot of young Jewish people tried to find spirituality in other religions because they didn't feel that they could find it in the Judaism that they were familiar with. You're part of what's called the Jewish Renewal Movement. Do you almost see that as a way of finding that spirituality in your own faith instead of looking elsewhere?
Absolutely. Judaism has a tremendous resources of spirituality, but those resources have been largely abandoned, in part by the trauma of Jewish history. It's hard to stay true to a God that is projected in the Bible that tells us that it's possible to fundamentally transform the world, change it to make it more ethically and spiritually alive. It's very hard to stay in contact with that God when bringing that message to the world has generated so much anger from ruling elites who have been furious that Jews keep saying that the world can be fundamentally transformed. Because they get furious at us, they have stirred up native populations against us all through our history. And as a result, Jews are a very disparaged and attacked group. So Jews want to run away from that, and yet there is in Torah and in the Jewish tradition a tremendous wealth of exciting spiritual insight.
I think a lot of people who were alienated from or disenchanted with their religion and have returned to it and seek a new, deeper spirituality there are also often looking for new rituals or new prayers which communicate the way they see the world. And for a lot of people, it's because they feel that some of the old prayers were sexist or homophobic or whatever. But I'm wondering how you feel about new rituals and new prayers, whether you look more to the past or whether you're comfortable with creating new rituals to describe more contemporary sentiments.
I think we need both. There's an incredible amount of wisdom in the Jewish tradition, and I'm very reluctant to throw out that wisdom that's been built up over the course of 3,500 years simply because it doesn't immediately speak to us. And I think we have to reclaim within those traditions a great deal of that wisdom and find it there. And I have found it there, for example, in the way that the Sabbath is structured. With all of the rigid rules around the Sabbath, I've found it to be precisely because of the ways that it keeps us away from the rhythms of the rest of the week. It has created an incredibly deep spiritual space for me and for many other people. On the other hand, I also think that there are elements of the Jewish tradition that do embody sexism and homophobia, or an outdated view of God as a kind of patriarch sitting in heaven and dispensing good or evil depending on whether we please him, her, whatever. That I think has to be transcended and has to be changed. I don't think that we can any longer think of God as sitting there waiting for us to deliver the best smells, like the best food, like the sacrifices in the ancient temple. There was a time when we thought that what God really wanted was a yummy piece of lamb chop, and so we presented God with the various sacrifices. In a later period, after the temple was destroyed 2,000 years ago, we came to think that what God really wanted was a bunch of correctly said prayers. And so we tried to present those prayers. I think this whole image of God is wrong. And I don't think we can think of God in those terms. And I think we need new language and new ritual that can speak to our contemporary understandings.
So you use a combination of the two, the old rituals and new prayers.
Exactly. And I think that even when I sometimes reject older prayers, I think it's worthwhile to re-understand the mindsets that people were in previous historical moments, if only to be able to transcend them.
Tell us what your typical Sabbath is like now.
Well, it includes, first of all, 25 hours of exclusion from the world of work. I mean, no telephones, no writing, no using money, no buying and spending, no creating of anything connected with power over. The Sabbath is a unique moment to relate to the world, relate to the physical world from the standpoint of awe and wonder and celebration rather than from the standpoint of domination. So virtually everything that is connected with the power that we normally have over the world, I try to avoid. And instead join with other people on Friday night in a ritual meal, singing, storytelling, and the next day with a prayer service in the morning, and again in the afternoon, a time to reflect, to read, often to commune with nature. Lots of good food, good sex are part of the tradition.
Good sex part of the Sabbath?
Yeah, it's actually an injunction for married people to have sex on Sabbath, because the Sabbath is not meant to be an affliction. It's meant to be pleasure.
What if you're not married?
There's no such injunction. You're not required to have sex.
No, you strike me as a pretty hardworking, achievement-oriented guy. You've got a magazine to put out. Say you're crashing on a deadline and it's the Sabbath. Will you ever violate any of your rules to save your magazine?
Well, I love Tikkun, and I think we're doing a great service to God by in the work of Tikkun, but absolutely not. In other words, it wouldn't be serving God to protect the magazine at the expense of undermining the sacredness of the Sabbath. The Sabbath is really a lifesaver for me, and I think for anyone who takes it seriously. For anybody who gets into those 25 hours in a serious way, it provides the spiritual nourishment that makes possible all the rest. So I absolutely don't do it. And when people frequently approach me in synagogue trying to hand me manuscripts to consider for the magazine, I say, not this Sabbath. I don't want to talk about the world of work. This is a moment for a different logic and a different way of being.
My guest is Michael Lerner. His new book is called Jewish Renewal. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. Back with Michael Lerner, editor of Tikkun magazine, a magazine offering a Jewish critique of politics and culture. You're both a very religious and a very political person, and those two come together for you in your life. In America, I think, you know, in the past few years, the most organized religious group in the political arena has been fundamentalists and the religious right. And I wonder what role you see for people who are more on the left like yourself and who are religious playing in the political world.
Well, I think it's very important for people with religious ideals to articulate those ideals in the political arena. I don't think that the problem with the religious right is that religion has no business being in the political arena. The problem with the religious right is that it's a religious vision that I think is offensive to anybody who recognizes that every human being is created in the image of God. And to the extent that that vision doesn't, it ought to be challenged. But there is a liberal notion that sort of says, if you allow any religion in there, you're never going to be able to stop the religious right. And so we should try to keep all of the religious views outside of the political realm. The problem with that view is that it fails to notice that the religious right is already in the political realm, and the people who don't have their religious or ethical values being argued for are the liberals and progressives. They think that they can keep the political arena neutral by refusing to argue for their highest ethical values in the political arena. But the result of that is not that the political arena stays ethically or religiously neutral. It's that the wrong people's ethical and religious views get articulated there, and nobody else gets a chance to articulate an alternative vision.
Although you disagree with the politics of the religious right, you've said that you want to really understand the legitimate needs that the religious right is addressing in America.
Exactly.
I wonder what conclusions you've reached about that.
Well, you see, from my standpoint, we live in a society which does not take the spiritual realm seriously, and which does not take people's spiritual and ethical needs seriously. And instead, it says, well, this has nothing to do with politics. And people in their daily life find that their life is extremely frustrating because it's based so much on the principle of self-interest. The dominant value of American society is take care of number one. Look out for number one. This was the name of one of the big bestsellers of the 80s, along with Winning Through Intimidation. And what happens is people experience the world of work, the economy, and then their own personal lives is so much based on that value that they find themselves isolated, not able to trust other people. Relationships are very hard to sustain because everybody thinks, well, if I don't take care of myself, nobody else will, so I'd better just watch out for myself and not be paying so much attention to the needs of others. In this context, where there's a huge spiritual crisis, the religious right comes forward and says, hey, we need a different set of values. We need values that value human beings, that value relationship, that value commitment, that value spirituality. And I think that they are right to a great extent in noticing that this is a big problem. The only problem is that they then come forward with a spiritual or ethical view that demeans somebody else, that blames these problems on some demeanable other, whether that be blacks or gays or feminists or liberals. They take they find some other to demean, but they are articulating a real problem. And I think that this is the great problem for the liberals, is that they don't understand that when people are moving to the right, they're often moving to the right for legitimate needs, for a legitimate desire for some kind of ethical and spiritual worldview that the liberals think is inappropriate for politics.
Now, I know you really want to have some kind of impact on political thought in America. And one way that you've done that is influencing something Hillary Clinton has said. I think it was in an April 1993 speech. She said a few things that referred to your thoughts on the politics of meaning. And do you want to paraphrase what it is she said, and then my question?
she said very explicitly that that this society needs a new politics of meaning, and that this society has learned to value money, but it hasn't learned to value values. And so we need a different kind of ethos in the society. And I think she came very close to saying exactly what the politics of meaning was about. And of course, Bill Clinton had written to me several years before to say that he had been reading Tikkun magazine on a regular basis, and that the politics of meaning we were talking about made a great deal of sense to him.
It must be very seductive to know that a president and first lady are not only reading you, but taking your thoughts very seriously, and in Hillary's case, even quoting from those ideas. And yet, as a journalist, it's part of your job in Tikkun to constantly look dispassionately on the president and the first lady's performance and criticize them. And I'm wondering if it's been hard for you to be very critical after establishing some kind of relationship with them. I mean, how seductive is that?
Well, let me say two things. Number one, as far as I'm concerned, the Clintons, after they articulated the politics of meaning, have gone very far away from actually living up to the politics of meaning, and we've said that very consistently in Tikkun magazine. We've been very critical of the distance that they've traveled and their failure to shape a program that actually flows from this, what should be the central goal of an administration in this period, which is to change the dominant ethos of American society from an ethos of selfishness to an ethos of caring. And although at times they've moved in those directions, they've neither consistently articulated that as a goal, nor have their policies flowed from that. So I've been very critical. We've been very critical of them. That's one thing. The other thing to say is, and this is related to Jewish renewal, the Jewish people have been involved in a struggle to heal and repair this world for 3,500 years. And I have no illusion that a particular president at a particular moment is going to suddenly come forward and be the embodiment of that and then go forward and do it. This is a long-term struggle. We've been involved in a long-term struggle for healing and repair for a very, very, you know, for a very long time, and will continue to be. So I'm not so impressed when a particular president says, "Yeah, he likes this language," and I don't have any delusion that I, Michael Lerner, am so important. Not at all.
Michael, let me quote something that you once wrote in Tikkun. You wrote, "Somehow Americans got it in their heads that their leaders must be on a higher level than everyone else. This insistence guarantees that our leaders are liars. They must hide who they really are." Elaborate
exactly
on that for me.
Well, it comes straight out of Jewish renewal. There were two messages that God gave. Number one is that the world can be fundamentally transformed. That was the first message of Sinai. The second message, after God saw the Jewish people building a golden calf, was and Moses was so furious he broke the tablets and so forth, God gave a second revelation, namely that one needs to have compassion, that the world is always going to be faced with human beings who want to go for their highest ideals, but who never fully embody those ideals. And that's been the history of the Jewish people for our 3,500 years. We are not the fullest embodiment of the ideals we believe in, but it is wrong to put us down for going for those ideals. And similarly, for every person committed to changing the world, for healing or repairing the world, we are all wounded healers. We are all people who are less than our highest ideals. Now, what the media says is, aha, see, I've discovered, I can unveil the ways in which you're not really being the fullest embodiment of your ideals. But that's inevitable. Nobody is going to be that fullest embodiment of the ideals, and we need to have a great deal of compassion and caring for people and not tell them, if you can't embody your ideals fully, then forget about your ideals, just go for selfishness. But instead, be able to accept that people will not be the fullest and highest, their fullest and highest selves, and encourage them to go for their highest selves, but at the same time treat them with love and compassion and caring.
I have one last question for you. Were your parents really surprised when you so fully embraced Judaism?
Well, at first they were very astounded. They thought when I had first decided to get into it, they thought this was a really lower middle class thing to do, was downwardly mobile.
Why would it be downwardly mobile?
Well, because if you wanted to make it an American society, you had to put your own self-interest first and not some values first. And you weren't going to make it that way. If you were going to be wealthy, you were not going to let Shabbos interfere. You certainly were not going to start talking about redistribution of wealth. You know, the Torah has this principle that every 50 years, all land gets redistributed back to an original equal redistribution. Well, talking about that sounded in the 1950s and 1960s as though this were communism, or this was some terrible political idea that would totally undermine your ability to have any credibility in American politics or American society. So the Torah has a lot of revolutionary ideas in it, and you really undermine your credibility as a political force or as an economic force if you took them seriously. But then again, Torah wasn't meant to be a guide for how to make it in American society. It was meant to be a guide for how to transform the world according to a higher view, according to a divine view of what the world could be.
But let's get back to your parents. So they were surprised.
They were very surprised, yes. And at first disappointed, and then at a later point delighted.
Disappointed because?
Disappointed because they had hoped that I would be a greater achiever, say, in the society, that I would make it more than they had. My father and mother had imagined that I was going to be a U.S. senator, the first Jewish U.S. senator from New Jersey. That was their fantasy. And it was very disappointing to them when I lost interest in political power and was more interested in articulating an ethical and spiritual view.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry.
Michael Lerner is the editor of Tikkun magazine and author of the new book, Jewish Renewal. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.